From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM as we get your week rolling. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. Emerging artists for the first couple hours tonight. Just go to the coasttocoastam.com website and read all about it. Floating format tonight as well. Later, Nick Bionic joins us. Spiritual messages. Get ready for that. Here's what's happening. Well, something is happening. Strong concerns that terrorist teams in Europe have selected targets, completed their surveillance, eluded capture, and are now ready to strike at airports and tourist attractions have prompted the State Department to ready a highly unusual travel advisory for Americans in Europe. Multiple law enforcement officers are saying this now. Intelligence and law enforcement officials have information that the teams could at any time launch a Mumbai-style terror attack that targets civilians for death or hostage-taking. The 2008 Mumbai attack used small arms and explosives to kill 175 people and paralyze the Indian city for days. The current concerns are for scenarios that include opening fire at airports in Europe as well as executing similar attacks at soft targets like tourist attractions or hotels. Here's investigator Doug Hagman with us. Doug, this is serious stuff, isn't it?
Indeed. You know, these plots appear to be originating from Pakistan, Yemen, and Egypt, and appear to be well-funded. The intelligence on these attacks or these planned attacks appears to be quite solid. And we're looking at, we've been seeing intelligence bulletins coming from the FBI and other agencies that describe what are called active shooter scenarios, indeed like a Mumbai-style attack where you've got a group of individuals armed with automatic weapons and grenades, small explosives, hostage-taking and going after soft targets. And I should add, too, that the warnings are starting to now appear to be operative for the continental United States as well. So,
oh, really? Okay.
We might be seeing some announcement of that here in the early part of next week.
Well, they're picking up something. They must be picking up chatter, or where do you think they're getting this information?
I think it's a combination of things. I think that indeed that there is chatter, but I think that a lot of this information is coming from some recent captures from terrorists in the in North Africa.
Okay, very good. Doug Hagman, his website, homelandsecurityus.com. Thank you, Doug. Life as an astronaut involves risks. We all know that. But who knew that these risks come even from wearing spacesuit gloves? That's right. A new study found that fingernail injury is a common problem with astronaut gloves. Sometimes the fingernails fall off, and that space flyers with larger hands are more likely to be hurt by their gloves. They're going to have to work on that. Well, you know, as you know, we have looked at the economic mess that we've all been in for a long, long time. We're going into now the fourth quarter. Let's hope that it fares better than what the rest of the year has been. We'll have to find out. Later this week, we'll be talking to a few experts about that and see what happens in their guess about the retail season. Movie fans are spending some face time with a story about the founders of Facebook. The social network director, David Fincher's drama about the quarrelsome creation of the online juggernaut, debuted as the number one weekend film with $23 million. Up next, as we begin our floating format program, we are going to be talking about an alphabet of good health in a sick world. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Two special guests for you for the next couple hours tonight. Mary Buttinger is a former Emmy Award-winning broadcast journalist. Now, she spent a decade in television news and writes about complementary and alternative medicine. Her articles have been published in Townsend Letter and Explorer for the Professional and Health Conscious and Public Health Alert. She has a book out called An Alphabet of Good Health in a Sick World. Here's Mary. Mary, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
I'm looking forward to this. And Dr. Martha Grout has 25 years in emergency medicine. For the last decade, she has been a homeopathic physician in Arizona. Dr. Grout and her team dedicated to the reversal of chronic disease. In 2007, Dr. Grout built a green medical center in Scottsdale, Arizona, where she established the Southwest's most diversified integrative medical center. Here's Dr. Martha Grout. Hello, Martha. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Good to be with you.
Good to have both of you here. Mary, let's start with you because you have an incredible story of what happened to you and what, I guess, got you on this path.
Yes. You know, sometimes you get that tapping on your shoulder in life, and I actually got hit by a 2x4, maybe a 4x6, over the head about 18 years ago. I just woke up out of the blue one morning, sick as a dog. I had swollen lymph nodes, and I had pain in every joint. I felt like I was a 90-year-old arthritic woman. And that started an odyssey for me through the medical community, an odyssey that took about 15 years to complete before I finally had an answer as to what was really wrong with me. I spent a good deal of time at the beginning at Mayo Clinic trying to get that answer, and bless them, they ran me through every test they had, and they said, you know, we're not really sure what you've got. We're going to knock it down with a bunch of prednisone and hope it doesn't come back. Oh, well, a year later, it did come back, and they ran a bunch of tests again, and they said, we're still not sure what you've got, but we think this time you've just got Still's disease rather than a precancer diagnosis. And again, we're going to knock that down with a whole bunch of drugs. And I said, you know, that's going to turn my body into a demolition derby. I really don't want to go there. Can't we fix this? Can't we cure this? They kind of tapped me on the knee and they said, well, you know, maybe we'll find a cure in your lifetime. But in the meantime, here's how we're going to manage your disease. I didn't want it managed. So I jumped off, if you will, into that world, which in 1990 wasn't so clear, called alternative and complementary medicine, to find out what that was.
And now,
I write about it.
This mission, was it exploratory for you? I mean, did you stumble across some people that could help, others who could not? How did you start your probe for this, Mary?
I think you find throughout medicine, regardless of what corner you look into, you find people who will always say, gee, if I'm a hammer, then you're a nail. They'll always try whatever it is that they know on you. What I found in the alternative world was a number of people who had stepped out of the box. I found doctors, one, for example, who had moved into a home and found himself getting very ill and tracked it down to the fact that there was a lot of formaldehyde in the insulation in his house.
Amazing.
I met another doctor who had been an anesthesiologist, got very ill from the anesthesia in the operating room, and he began to look for answers other than what he'd met in med school. Dr. Grout, same situation. She was working for, I think, 25 years in an emergency room. Couldn't be more of a traditional doctor than an ER doc.
That's right.
And she found when she had some patients with back pain that they frowned on her kind of stepping out of the box and helping them in ways that helped them better than just giving them a pain pill. So most of the doctors that I have found and learned a lot from had personal reasons to look beyond the training that they got initially in med school. It made a big difference in their lives and how they approach medicine.
And you know, Dr. Martha Grout, as you know, a lot of great medical practitioners out there, dedicated men and women trying to help people, trying to, you know, look for the right pharmaceuticals to use, trying to just do whatever they can. But sometimes they come across a barrier where, you know, medicine won't allow them to jump over that, to take that hurdle, to do the alternative. And that's where people like you, I think, are very, very important to this growth of alternative medicine.
I was extraordinarily fortunate to be able to come to Arizona, where we actually have a board of homeopathic medicine, which regulates doctors like me so that we can do treatments that are maybe outside the bounds of traditional medicine, and yet still our patients are protected.
Now,
they actually put in statute, George, in the early 1980s, the fact that doctors who have this extra license, a homeopathic license, can actually do things like chelation therapy without being harassed, if you will, by those who work under boards that don't allow it. Because the patients actually demanded it. And in Arizona and also in Nevada, the patients got what they asked for.
They can't threaten to take your license away or anything like that. because you practice alternative medicine.
Correct, because I would fall under the Board of Homeopathic Medicine if a question were ever to arise.
Good. That's good. How did you, Martha, get involved in all this?
Well, you know, as Mary said, I was working ER. I had worked ER for a lot of years. Had a bunch of patients with back pain, very specifically with back pain, and I really couldn't help them. All I had to offer them was pain medicine. They really didn't want pain medicine. They really wanted their back pain gone. I had come across a neuromuscular massage therapist who had actually helped my daughter, who was one of those people with back pain. And so I started referring patients to this essentially massage therapist, and was called on the carpet by my hospital administrator and by the ER director, and was informed that I was not to refer outside the bounds of traditional Western medicine.
That's when you decided enough is enough, huh?
Yeah, you know, I went home and I talked to my family and I took my letter of resignation in the next day because I really couldn't practice medicine that way.
What a gutsy move for you.
Well, it wasn't quite as gutsy as it sounded. I owed them 3 months. But still, yeah, it was interesting. It was the start of a whole new kind of life.
You both talk about something that I agree with wholeheartedly here, and that has to do with inflammation. As a matter of fact, I've got a journalist who comes on the program often, Christian Wild, who started talking about inflammation a couple of years ago. And I really wasn't that aware of it. And he was convinced, still is, and now I am too, that inflammation in the body, whether it's in your arteries or wherever, is a huge cause for so many problems. And it sounds like you both agree with that.
I absolutely do. It's a fundamental tenet of functional medicine. It's kind of like driving a car with the brakes on just a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, the brakes wear out a lot faster. Same thing with our bodies.
Well, that's a good point. And Mary, when you were doing your work as an award-winning journalist, did you cover medical stories and everything else, or did you have a specialty?
I had a specialty with hard news and with live reporting, but early on in my career, I look back on it now and I laugh. It's ironic. I had to do a weekly Healthline program on Fridays, and I never knew what to do it on, and I would just call the hospitals, and they were happy to feed me with stuff.
That's great. What market were you in?
I was in Salinas, California when I did that.
Oh, you were? Okay. All right. I had years ago, an old friend was from that market, Joe Glover, but we're talking about in the 70s.
I know that name.
Yeah. He's a good anchor guy, and then he worked with me in Detroit, and I think he ended up in Florida somewhere. Now, when you both report on people who have had heart attacks, you say that it's not all cholesterol. As a matter of fact, high cholesterol doesn't cause heart disease. Explain that. Which one wants that? Martha, let's let you take that first.
Well, you know, cholesterol has never been shown to be causative of heart disease. Cholesterol is something which our bodies absolutely require. It forms the structure of our cell membranes. It forms the backbone of the creation of all of the steroid hormones, including sex hormones and including adrenal hormones. And it's something that is really hugely important in our system. There is a whole group of people in northern Italy who have extremely high cholesterol, don't have any more heart disease than anybody else in the world. So, you know, when we try to decrease the amount of cholesterol in our bloodstream by giving statin drugs, it certainly decreases the cholesterol. It also decreases the synthesis of something that's called CoQ10,
right,
which is absolutely required in order to enable our cells to take out the cellular trash. And so that's part of the reason why people on statins sometimes get congestive heart failure or get extreme muscle pain. You know, they can't get rid of their cellular trash and the cells start to break down.
That's a good point. You got to take that supplement, don't you?
Well, if you're going to take a statin, you really have to take CoQ10. And cardiologists are beginning to realize that, but many of them still don't and still don't prescribe CoQ10.
Most doctors, if you see an article, you know, let's say, you know, you're taking care of yourself and you see an article and you send it to your doctor, Do they read it, Mary? Do they care about that?
I don't think, from what people have told me firsthand and from what I read, that doctors have much time to read the journals. And I think that's where we start to get into the discussions about too many times the primary educator of the conventional doctor is the drug salesman who gets in there during the lunch hour and takes his 10 or 15 minutes, and that's not time that the doctors are reading the journals.
No, not at all. Vitamin D, you both believe it's very important. Generally, that wasn't that well known a few years ago, was it?
No, it's like, and even still, I think we're seeing only the tip of the iceberg on how essential vitamin D is. And unfortunately, because in the 80s, we got all of these commercials funded by the cosmetic industry and by the sunscreen industry telling us the sun is bad, we've stayed out of the sun to the point now that even rickets are coming back in children. We know that vitamin D plays a role in keeping cancers away, and probably one of the many reasons we can point to for the rise in cancers in the last 30 years has been that we've been ducking the sun. You know, mankind was born. He was made to be in the sunshine. If you take a look at people who lived in the 1900s, they were outdoors for many hours of the day, getting many more units of vitamin D than we do. I will laugh sometimes when people will look at folks on the beach and make a comment about, gee, you know, they're exposing themselves to the sun, they'll probably get skin cancer. And I will look at them and I'll say, you know, think back to the European sailors, those men who spent decades out on the water. They all died of skin cancer.
Yeah.
And you see the person start to look at me a little funny. And I'll say, and think of the American Indian who spent most of his day, her day, out there in the sun. And now they're really looking at me funny. I said, that's right. They did not die of skin cancer. The message that we have not yet gotten out is that there seems to be a much, much stronger connection to skin cancers and the lack of omega-3 in our diet. You know, our ancestors were eating a lot of the natural foods that gave them omega-3s. We don't. We eat pizza and french fries, and they're full of omega-6s.
Oh, that processed stuff. It's horrible.
Yeah, and then these young kids who have not had a good, strong diet maybe for a few years will go grab a burger and a Coke and fries. They'll go to hit the tanning booth. That's a prescription for skin cancer.
Right, absolutely. What about balancing your pH level? I've had a number of experts on lately who have told me that cancer thrives in an acidic body. Do you agree
with
that?
I'd say an acidic and a sugary body, yes.
Yeah.
And let me toss that one to Dr. Grout, since that's what she deals
sure.
with.
Sure. Okay. And how do we get more alkaline in our system, Martha?
You know, fruits and vegetables actually create alkalinity in the system. Things like meats and sugars create acidity. That's been known in Chinese medicine for thousands of years.
And why the balance? Why do you need to balance that body level to about a 7 or something like that?
Well, first of all, we exist at a very, very narrow range of pH. So, you know, we're not talking huge differences one way or the other. But we are talking a system. If you think about cancer cells require lots and lots of sugar. They don't know how to metabolize fats, so they can only live on sugar. They have excessive numbers of insulin receptors on their surface. And at some point, I'll talk to you about insulin potentiation therapy, which is a way of treating cancer to actually target the cancer cells rather than the entire body.
And are you convinced, too, that losing weight will lower your glucose level?
I'm totally convinced about that. I see it happen with my patients all the time. You know, they'll come in with a blood sugar of close to 300 on gazillions of metformin. And as we help them modify their diet, they lose the metformin, they lose the weight, they lose the blood sugar. You know, they end up with blood sugars of perfectly normal levels. It's wonderful to see, and they feel infinitely better.
And you know what? We see these pills all the time. What's the latest problem? Avandia?
Oh, Avandia, yeah.
Oh,
the best thing that I personally have ever seen any doctor work with is the homeopathic version of HCG. People can stick with that, and they absolutely do lose weight. That belly fat that's the most metabolically active fat that's sitting out there giving your body the wrong chemical messages all day long and feeds that chronic inflammation that you spoke of at the beginning.
All right. Well, stay with us, both of us. We're going to take phone calls with you next hour as well. Next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Dr. Martha Grout and Mary Benninger as we talk about breast cancer awareness in just a moment. And a very important issue to a lot of people. Hey, are you a member of Streamlink yet, Coast Insiders? All you got to do is go to coasttocoastam.com for just pennies a day. Sign up and take advantage of archives, past programs, your iPhone apps, Android and BlackBerry apps to come. And it's just a fun way of being part of Coast to Coast AM. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, we're with Mary Budiner and Dr. Martha Grout. Mary, tell us about the involvement here with Breast Cancer Awareness. This is the month, isn't it?
This is. October every year has been the time that the whole landscape turns pink, and your friends call you up and say that they're going to run in the race for the cure, and would you please make a donation with them? And I say no. I do.
Why?
Because, you know, the whole pink ribbon thing draws our attention to awareness. That's it. Stops there. If anyone is not aware at this point in time that we've got an issue with breast cancer, perhaps they're living under a rock. I can't imagine who that would be. I think we need to shift to prevention, and we need to do it now because we have the cure. It's already here. In large part, we already know what causes a cancer to grow and how not to make it grow. In fact, there was an unusually candid report that came out this year from the President's Cancer Panel, and it said Americans are suffering grievous harm from the 80,000 or so chemicals in our daily environment. Many of these chemicals, most of them, have not been tested for safety, and we know that a good number of them are carcinogenic, meaning they cause cancer. So we know that if we can learn what is in our environment that has cancer-causing chemicals in it, if we can remove those, we can lessen our exposure.
Absolutely. And it's just, a lot of this is common sense, Mary, isn't it?
It is. You know, we all have cancer cells inside of us every single day.
Absolutely.
Our bodies
we're probably born that way.
Well, it's just the result of living in the real world. Your body makes maybe up to 10,000 errant cells a day. If your immune system is robust and on the job, it takes care of them and cleans them out. Not a problem. But when the immune system is weak, that's when the cancer cells can get hold. And what weakens the immune system? We don't give our genes the right food. Food is information. Food is medicine.
Right.
Also, we slam our immune system with the chemicals of living in the everyday world. And then we also slam our immune systems and our bodies with electromagnetic frequencies from television, radio, wireless communications, cell phones. All of that reverberates around us 24/7 with rhythms that are not what the body would say are natural rhythms.
And more and more of that is all around us.
There's more to come.
It's going to get worse.
There's more to come. Yeah.
You two talk about mammographies, and I want you to point that out. It's very important for women to understand this. Years ago, that's all they pushed. You got to get a mammography. You got to do this. Now they're saying, wait a minute, less might be better. What's going on?
Mammography, in fact, is ionizing radiation, and that is one of the only things that the American Cancer Society actually says causes cancer. And so here we are recommending that these women get their breasts mashed and irradiated every year. And in point of fact, we're irradiating them with something that increases their chances of cancer. There is a technique that's called thermography.
Now, what is that?
Thermography actually measures the heat signature that comes off of a body. And so it'll be a measure of inflammation. It's not an anatomic test. It's not going to tell you if you have a lump. Your fingers tell you if you have a lump. But it will measure inflammation, and it can detect inflammation years before mammography, for instance, will see calcification or a lump. So I personally think it's a far better technique.
It, you know, everyone will agree that early detection is key. And thermography, which can see the heat signature of a tumor forming maybe 10 years before mammography can actually pick up on the lump, is much better early screening. If I could be king for a day and change the world, I would say, okay, all of you pink ribbon groups out there, please, let's drop mammography as the preferred screening technique and let's go to thermography. I know that everybody's invested in mammography machines. Mm-hmm. I know that Susan G. Komen, for example, has had the General Electric representatives on their board, but let's do what's right for women. Let's get a better screening technique and let's not give them an annual dose of radiation and all the false positives that go with it, which is why they recommended less screening.
How often do our cells die and replenish themselves? Is it going through a process every, what, six weeks? How fast?
It all depends on the area of the body. The cells of the GI tract die and replenish themselves within a few days. The cells of the bone takes 7 or 8 years to turn over half of them.
So if you are able to keep, let's say, a diseased cell from replicating, but to come back as a stronger, fresh cell because of taking care of yourself, is that a way of curing cancer, for example?
Possibly it might be. To be able to restore these cells to health would be an absolute ideal result, rather than killing them off, rather than treating them as the enemy.
You know, I think you've got to an interesting point there, though. What causes a good cell to go bad?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the stress of the food and the chemicals and the EMF.
Yeah, your environment, everything.
Yeah, on top of genetics that maybe make the cell susceptible.
I mean, do you think 4,000 years ago that human beings got cancer? And if they did, at what rate did they get it compared to today?
Dan, we can only look at what we know in terms of statistics that were sort of kept in the year 1900, and it was rare.
Yeah, but 4,000 years ago, I think people probably did occasionally get cancer. There are reports of, you know, unusual tumors, but not very often, not very frequently. Of course, people didn't live as long either, didn't really have the chance to develop tumors so much.
Why didn't they live long? You know, when you're looking at, you know, healthier food, no pollution, why didn't they live?
You
know,
yeah,
I'm not talking about the biblical days now. You know, not like Methuselah in his 900 years, but generally, why didn't they live long?
Right. And infants died of diarrhea and infectious diseases. They didn't necessarily have always the most fantastic diet. I suspect it was very similar to the way it is now. You know, there are haves and have-nots. And the ones that had not probably died out a lot sooner.
If you two could at least begin to educate Americans and Canadians and people worldwide listening to the show about alternative medicine, let's start with you, Martha. What would you tell them? What direction would you like to see people go?
I would tell them that the first thing that they really need to do if they really want to be alternative is to look at what they're putting into their bodies and make sure that it's really clean. And the second thing that they need to do is to look at what they are being advised to do by the establishment and make up their own minds whether it makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. And how about you, Mary?
I'd say take a look at what we have been told. The conventional wisdom, for example, is we're going to fight breast cancer. We're going to fight whatever disease has fallen upon us. I'd say, let's take a look at what the body's trying to tell us, because that's how it communicates. And if you fight lung cancer, for example, you don't win. If you educate people that drawing all of that smoke and all of those chemicals in cigarettes into your lungs causes lung cancer, and if you stop doing that, we'll have less lung cancer, it worked. That's the power of prevention. We can apply that same thought to breast cancer, although not quite as cleanly. With lung cancer, it's pretty simple. What's in a cigarette? However, look at the fact that it took us, what, 25 years before we started telling the truth about what everyone kind of already knew, which was that cigarettes cause cancer. So how long is it going to be before we can tell the truth and be candid about here are the environmental connections? It's not as simple as just a cigarette. There's a whole lot more out there. But here are the environmental connections that appear to be causing cancer. And if we can learn how to avoid them, we will have a lot less breast cancer. There's one group out there that teaches that breast cancer is preventable, and that's the Breast Cancer Fund. They do an extraordinary publication from time to time, and they just updated it last week called State of the Evidence, Year 2010. It is a wonderful downloadable PDF that is a primer on all the environmental carcinogens. In fact, Dr. Grout prints it out in her clinic and gives it to all of her patients.
Now, would you recommend people, still undergo chemo and radiation, consult with their oncologist if they have cancer? What do you tell them?
Yes, when there is a tumor, it needs to be at least debulked, and it does need to be treated. I would recommend to them, however, again, that they think outside the box and that they look at something called insulin potentiation therapy, which I told you in the last hour I was going to talk about. Insulin potentiation therapy uses the fact that cancer cells are ravenous for glucose and actually sneaks in by using glucose plus a small dose of chemo. It's a way of getting the chemo into the cancer cell without getting it into all of the other rapidly dividing cells of the body. It's an amazing way to treat. We can get chemo into the cancer cell, and people don't lose their hair, they don't throw up, they don't get ulcers in their mouths, they don't get terrible diarrhea, and they don't lose their white cells.
Okay, if people who might have cancer today, and they're listening to you right now, and they want more information on this, what do they do?
They could go to one of two websites. One of them would be mine. And the other website, and my website, is arizonaadvancedmedicine.com. The other thing that they could do is they could go to the bestanswerforcancer.com or the Elke Best website, ELKEBEST.com. where they will learn about insulin potentiation therapy and find the name of physicians in their area who do this kind of therapy.
Yeah, we have the potential to do a much more intelligent, much updated treatment for cancer using one-tenth or so of the amount of chemo by just taking a look at what makes a cancer cell vulnerable. What's its weakness? Well, it runs on sugar. Women will see this, for example, when the doctor orders a PET scan. They'll see that they go to get the scan. They're given sugar water plus a radioactive agent. The cancer cells, which run on sugar, take up that sugar and the radioactive agent, and voila, you've got a picture of a mass wherever the cancer is. So with IPT, Dr. Grout can do exactly the same thing, except instead of using the radioactive agent, she puts in a bit of the chemotherapy agent. That's part one. Part two of this more intelligent approach to cancer is finding out what you're sensitive to. If a woman has a bladder infection, for example, they'll take the sample from you and they'll run it across the various antibiotics that they might be able to use, and they'll say, aha, these don't work, but this one really works for you. And that's what they'll give you. Dr. Grout can do the same thing with the various chemotherapy drugs for cancer to find out what works for you, because there's no point in putting those kinds of drugs into the body if they're not going to work for you. Unfortunately, traditional oncologists don't do a chemosensitivity test. They're kind of more of a one-size-fits-all approach.
And Martha, right before the break, you were talking about a way to reduce weight. Would you tell us that again? What was that?
A way to reduce weight, yeah.
We're talking about people had high glucose levels.
HCG?
Yeah,
we do. Well, there are a couple of different ways. One of them, if you want to lose weight in a hurry, we use homeopathic HCG, which is human chorionic gonadotropin. It's a hormone which women produce when they're pregnant, and it causes you to grow muscle. It is a growth hormone, and so if there's cancer, one has to be a little careful. We use the homeopathic version. We feel that that way we're able to use the energetic properties of the substance without actually stimulating cells to grow. The other way that we treat when folks come in with high blood sugar is we simply put them on a very low glycemic diet. One of the ways you get high blood sugar, your grandmother always told you, you know, you eat so much candy, you're going to develop diabetes. Well, it turns out that's actually true. It's not just an old wives' tale. And so we put people on a very low glycemic diet, no sugars, no grains, basically.
Yeah, no potatoes, starches?
No potatoes. Sweet potato, if you have to have something, but no potatoes.
Can I cheat during Thanksgiving? Just one day?
You know, once a year, yes.
You can do that. As long as you get right back into it, you know?
Yeah, once a week, no.
Now, you talk about chronic illnesses show up on an energetic level. What does that mean?
Remember that everything that we do manifests on many different levels. So we manifest on the physical level. We manifest on the emotional level, on the mental level, and on the spiritual level as well. In Chinese medicine, it was very clear that certain personalities were subject to certain kinds of emotions and certain organs would be affected. And so, for instance, you think about breast cancer that we're talking about this month. The breast is part of the whole neuroendocrine system. And very often people with breast cancer actually have issues that relate to their own self-identity, sometimes to having been abused as children or as teenagers. It'll very often manifest in the female organs. So that's what I mean on different levels.
Okay. All right. Well, this is great information. We're going to take calls in a couple minutes. With both of you for the rest of the next hour as well. Mary, in journalism, are you seeing a trend of coverage for more and more health-related issues, or is that still by the wayside?
There are conversations about what you can and cannot talk about. When Michael Pollan, for example, broke into the New York Times, it became okay then to talk about food. However, it is still not okay to talk about probably one of the most controversial subjects, which is vaccines. If you were to submit an article questioning vaccines, you probably won't find anyone to run it. Now, last year, the Atlantic Monthly magazine made an exception to that, and they ran a couple articles questioning during the swine flu pandemic, questioning the validity of vaccines and whether they really work. But trying to broach that mainstream media, that gets tricky.
Well, yeah, it sure does. And, you know, at least on this program, we continue to do it. And with vaccines, I never tell anybody not to or to. It's their own business. They can make up their own mind. But I haven't had a flu shot God, for as long as I can remember. I mean, I might have had some when I was a kid, and I haven't had the flu.
Yeah, why in the world would you want to inject yourself with mercury?
Why not?
Yeah, yes. Unfortunately, this year they've combined the swine flu shot with the flu shot and kept the mercury in it.
Absolutely. It's crazy. And I'm sure you're opposed to fluoride in the water, both of you? Aspartame? MSG?
All of those yummy
All of those
things.
Are on our do not do list.
Yeah. What a great diet that stuff is, huh? All right. Well, stick with us. We're going to come back in just a second. We're going to take phone calls with both of you. Floating format tonight. So later on in the night, we've got another program scheduled for you with a special guest as we talk about spiritual messages.